You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to Tuesday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I'm your host Ewan Taylor, and tonight I'm joined by the insert someone offensive and insert someone even more offensive than the Terrace. It's Sean McGuigan and Duncan McKay. Evening, gentlemen.
Hello there.
How are you getting on?
Hello, Ewan.
Hello. Hello. So now in tonight's show, we were going to cover a game hosted in a place that over recent years has shown scant regard for minorities, little respect for women, and a 19th century approach to workers' rights. But ultimately, Clyde against Falkirk didn't quite make the cut. However, we are going to cover three Scottish Football League slobber knockers that took place in the weekend just past. And why don't we start with Sean's boys, Raith Rovers, who fell to a quite silly 5-2 defeat at home to Queen's Park. Sean, what happened?
Aye, it was quite silly. I actually wasn't in attendance at this one, thankfully. And I don't know, see if I had been, I would have found this quite funny. Like, I would have been able to take, like, funny elements of the game. You've just conceded 5 goals at home to Queen's Park. And, that, like, certainly when the 5th goal went in, probably the 4th, I would have laughed. But see, when you're not at the game and you're just getting kind of bare facts sent to your phone.
Yeah.
I just spent a good chunk of the afternoon, like, swearing at a screen, which I wouldn't have been doing if I was at the game. But a really, really weird game.
Mm. Yeah.
No, I wasn't dismayed by how Rovers played. But I do think that, like, I remember when Owen Coyle was appointed Queen's Park manager, and I think a lot of people were like, I don't think Queen's Park fans were particularly excited. I think a lot of other fans of other clubs thought it wasn't necessarily a great appointment, but he seems to be doing really well. And, like, even on Saturday there, like, previously this would, like, Raith under McGlynn, if you got in their faces, you would have them rattled and they would struggle. And I think this season, they still have players that could play through you, but certainly recently their wing backs have been pushed up, which is one of the main reasons that they managed to win 4 in a row. And Brad Spencer was dictating things. And certainly on Saturday there, they didn't allow the wing backs to get forward. So they didn't allow the full backs to get forward. Brad Spencer was pretty much man matched throughout the game. And although they created chances, some of them were good chances, but a lot of them were kind of like half chances. And I just thought Queen's Park, I thought they played us really well and ultimately were clinical. So as much as Raith had more chances, more possession, Queen's Park kind of looked like they were worthy winners in the end.
Yeah. I don't know about, like, I've not seen if they're even available, but, you know, XG stats, because, you know, the Bears stats were that Raith had 20 shots and 13 on target and Queen's Park had 10 shots and 5 on target. But I would have said that a lot of the Queen's Park chances were better. Certainly, obviously, Murray's second is just a, you know, tap in on the line. I don't think Raith had any chances anywhere near as clear as that. The first goal by Aidan Connolly, just another one for the collection, just an absolute belter. There's a few, you know, I think Vaughan had a few shots from outside the box as well. You didn't really, I wouldn't say you're carving Queen's Park open as such.
No, very much so. And I think, I wouldn't say I was necessarily concerned as such, but you know when a team has like two extremes, and what I mean by that is Raith have been very good at home, defensively pretty good. And if they take the lead, they've pretty much always see the game out. Now, on Saturday, none of those things happened. But up until recently, the Wraith fans have been saying, right, you know something, we're good at home, we're pretty poor away. If we can just start picking up points away from home, we'll absolutely be in the promotion mix. But when you've got those extremes, the opposite is also true. So see if they start having a like pretty poor home form without picking up points away from home, then suddenly they're not necessarily going to be in the mix at the bottom of the league. But certainly it wasn't that long ago that there wasn't that much of a difference between them and Cove and Arbroath. So I'm hoping it's a blip. And they seem to play reasonably well on the day, and certainly then they get a stroke of luck. I mean, two deflections off Liam Dick doesn't really help matters. But I feel they need quite a convincing win against Auchinleck this weekend to kind of maybe get back on track. But I don't think they'll be in the top four equation come the end of the season. I think they're a team that is still a work in progress. I almost feel like they're just not quite, they're not the finished article, I suppose.
I was just going to say, I very much enjoyed, I think it was the day after, they didn't quite do a post-match interview, but Ian Murray talked about the fact that if you concede five at home, you're going to struggle to get a result. And I was like, well, I think that happens in away games as well, that you concede five, it's always going to be a problem.
That's first point of order for the next week, I would say. Try not to concede five goals and take it from there. The first Thomas goal was an odd one, and it did take a deflection, but I thought the deflection should have actually took it like closer to Jamie McDonald than it would have otherwise, and he just like sort of fell over.
Jamie McDonald was there was a bit of chat about Jamie McDonald after this game. I don't know how much of it was totally warranted. Certainly, the equaliser, Simon Murray, I mean, it was a well-taken free kick. It's not as if it was in the postage stamp. In terms of how the wall set up, I think it went high enough over the wall to make a jump irrelevant, but not everybody jumped. So maybe that might have helped matters, whether they could have jumped high enough to deflect it over, I'm not sure. But it kind of felt like when he was running up to take it, there was only one place that the ball was going. But McDonald didn't seem to be aware of it, whereas everybody else did. In terms of the goal,
you weren't sure on either.
It was a good finish, but I did think it was savable. In terms of the second one, it's difficult to tell because it kind of goes through a crowd of players. It does deflect off Liam Dick. It definitely wrong foots him, but you're right. He just seems to roll backwards. And I think the one, I thought the one that he was definitely at fault for was, I believe it was the third one, where Wraith Rovers had like pretty much everybody in their own penalty area, but still somehow managed to not mark Simon Murray. But as the ball gets fired across goal, Jamie McDonald dives for it. He gets his hand to it, but just doesn't get enough of a hand to stop it. I thought that was the one that he definitely could have looked at himself and done a bit better. But there was another couple where I was, that doesn't look quite so great. And if a team's only getting five shots on target and all of them go in,
yes,
I suppose you're like, come on, Jamie, save some of them.
I would say on that third goal, it's just maybe an element of Jamie McDonald not quite believing his eyes that Wraith could have nine players back and yet not one of them thought it might be an idea to follow the runner. It's not as if Simon Murray's kind of a shy and retiring presence that might just sneak up at you. Like it's always fairly obvious where he's going to go. So
he's also a bright ginger pest. So how you wouldn't see him at the back post? I'm not sure. I don't actually know if they maybe had too many people back. It's like, right, we've got nine.
There's nine of us. Someone else will be doing it.
Must be absolutely fine here.
It's often when you're playing sevens or whatever, you've got one man advantage. You end up losing to the team with six because you just assume that someone else is going to do the marking. You know, all right, it's not actually that much of a team effort.
I think from a Wraith perspective, and it's really really frustrating. And I said this when I saw we'd went 2-1 down just before half time. I thought the issue with this is he'll give it until about the 65th minute, and then he'll play about five up front. There is something admirable about the fact that he goes so gung-ho, but he goes gung-ho very, very early in games. And like this, occasionally when they're only a goal down. Like, he changes the entire system and just goes very, very, very attacking. And every single time he's done it, I think he's now done it maybe 5 times this season, it's made matters worse. I don't think they've ever, they scored on Saturday, to be fair, but they were already 5-1 down at that point. And like, you'd think, like, let's say you had a sore eye and you think to yourself, I've got a really sore eye. I think I'll prod it really hard with my finger. Like, and it doesn't make...
Was that your approach to your recent eye issues, showing this?
Aye, that's how it didn't get any better. Yeah. Like once you've done that once, you'd think, right, I didn't like that at all. That was awful. But he just continues to do it. Time after time after time, prodding himself in the eye and making matters considerably worse. And he kind of done it exactly the same way again on Saturday. I think eventually we had 3 up front after about 70 minutes. And I appreciate by that point we're really chasing the game, but to change everything, to withdraw Brad Spencer, who is the player that kind of gives the team a bit of balance, like suddenly you just kind of lose the midfield at that point, and then ultimately you lose the game. And every time he does it, that's what happens, and it's very, very frustrating.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, Lewis Vaughan, is that his first 90 minutes since he came back?
Yes. Aye. So first start on Saturday. We were surprised to see him. To be fair, Connell, who they have on loan from Kilmarnock, hasn't really set the heather alight since he joined on loan. I was still surprised that Vaughan started, more surprised that he lasted the full 90. From what I could gather, I think it's a kind of obvious point to make that he's still not match fit, but I was surprised that he remained on for that full 90. And I think perhaps the writing is on the wall, the fact that you're desperate for goals and they still don't bring on the 6'7" Faroese blunderbuss. He doesn't get off the bench, even though you have an injury prone Lewis Vaughan. Just leave them on for the full 90.
Yeah, predicted that he wasn't going to be good.
There's still wee examples of Vaughan that he is still an excellent player, but I think they'll need to kind of wean him through games, 50 mm-hmm. minutes, 20 minutes, half hours here and there. I don't think he's ready to be starting.
Yeah. I thought he had, you know, had a few wee dribbles. He looked like he was moving pretty well. You know, he didn't look like a guy that, you know, you're based on how it's, you know, that missed as much football as he has, obviously, but as you say, well, I think as you said on the podcast with Craig recently, like, you know, if you run him into the ground, then you'd have to suspect the same thing, you know, might happen, unfortunately. So hopefully that doesn't. But yeah, so that was the game at Starks Park. But perhaps we move on to another game with 7 goals, perhaps the game of the Scottish football season so far, arguably. Which was Edinburgh City against Alloa. So Edinburgh City, or rather FC Edinburgh, or rather Edinburgh, 4, Alloa, I think they're eventually, Alloa Athletic 3, Alloa taking a 3-goal lead after 17 minutes, and then Edinburgh coming back to win 4-3. I've seen the highlights, but I also got extensive notes from my good friend Alistair Moncrief, who you may have listened to on a previous Patreon episode we did, where we discussed the sort of mainly the sort of off-pitch travails that Edinburgh had at the start of the season with the move to Meadowbank, and also the name Farago, amongst other issues. It does seem that they've turned a bit of a corner off the park, so they've obviously, well, I wouldn't say sorted the name, because I noticed on BBC they still call them FC Edinburgh, but I can't really complain about that given I called them the wrong name, two different wrong names. But yeah, so they're just going by Edinburgh, which is, I don't think it's a fantastic name, but it's less embarrassing than sounding, I would say, than FC Edinburgh. And they've also, I think, sorted out they've lowered ticket prices, which was a big bone of contention, given how ill-suited Meadowbank currently is for viewing football at, albeit I think they are trying to fix that as well, but that might be a longer term thing. So having that was why Alistair was there, having sort of said he wouldn't be back until they sorted some things, but they have now sorted them. And what game to be back for? So yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw the highlights, but the first three goals for Alba were all came from corners, and all were a result of them just being quite a bit bigger, I would say, than Edinburgh, and maybe exposing a bit of an issue. I mean, I think it's the second goal. It goes down as a goal for Donnelly and BBC. I'm pretty sure it's an own goal from Handling, because I've never seen anyone do this before. But he's on the line and he heads the ball onto the bar and then back off his own head and into the net, which I enjoyed that.
I thought it was an own goal. I knew at the time that it was credited to Donnelly, but I must admit, I didn't go back and check after watching the goals. But I definitely thought it was an own goal. I did enjoy Robbie Much's attempt at saving the third, where it was like
yes.
it's like he's suddenly just been caught with some kind of serious affliction and just fell over. I mean, the ball just bounces over him. But yeah. I took from this game that Edinburgh cannot defend corners based on the three goals that they conceded. And one thing I would really, I wish there was a camera set up in the crowd, but there was maybe at least two Alloa fans that were audible when the third goal went in, who were really reveling in the fact that they were 3-0 and really kind of bumming it up.
As you would after 20 minutes away from home.
Don't get me wrong, I could understand why they were excited, but there was one boy that was really like, yes! I was like, oh, I'd love to see what you were up to when it went 4-3.
Yes, that would be quite fun. So, but I mean, I don't think, it didn't seem that Alloa actually had been that great to be 3 up, but obviously, you know, if you score this basically the same goal 3 times with various issues from Edinburgh and amongst all that, then fair enough. But Edinburgh obviously came back into it, probably saved a lot of the crowd going to the pub at half time by scoring in the 36th minute to get a goal back. So Ryan Shanley getting his first, a lovely finish, this one. Where he sort of squares the keeper up and then sort of fakes to go back post and then hooks into the front post. So that was it.
He appeared to be the only one on the pitch that didn't think he was offside as well. I think that was that.
I would like to have seen. I mean, yeah, it's not the best camera angle.
That's very polite of you, and it was absolutely abysmal for having any sort of, almost like, I was about to mention that on the race pictures. I've been to Starks Park. It does not have a spirit level is needed in that area to get your camera, because it does not slope as much as that as the highlights would suggest. But yes, the Meadowbank broadcast facilities are maybe not quite up to
they're
fitting with the rest of the ground. Yeah. I suppose
we'll come on to some even more spectacular camera work, I think, in the third game, which is really something. So obviously Edinburgh get back into then at 10 just before half time, and then really kicks off the second half. Shanley scores again, another decent goal, and then almost instantly, Alloa get a penalty. Wasn't entirely clear what it was for, but I mean, there's a coming together.
It could have been outside the box as well.
Yes.
I was really hoping that they would just leave the highlights for the next few seconds, because I mean, it looked like there was a...
It looks like he'd given the free kick as well at one point. But
that's just it. It was like the foul... So I thought it was going to be like a tug, and it looked like it was like pretty deep in the penalty area. I mean, if that was a foul, it was clearly in the penalty box. However, it looks like he starts to draw the line with the foam, and then even the commentator goes, I think initially goes, oh, that's a penalty. Then he goes, oh no, is it a free kick?
But then instantly
it just changes to I'm about to take the penalty. And it was very frustrating to see what the referee done next, because the referee even looked like he was very confused as to what was happening.
Yes. And this is a referee that's taken Premier League games, or Premiership games rather, normally.
That doesn't mean he's any good though.
No, it does not. It's a good name for it. So he misses. Steph Skill misses the penalty. Good save from Much, to give him his due after his issue with the third goal. And then 5 minutes later, a horror tackle, you'd have to say, from O'Donnell on Lee Hamilton, and a red card just by the halfway line. Didn't seem any need to make the tackle.
Strange. A player who likes a card, so I think he's had 5 bookings, and that's his first red card this season. So he is somebody who isn't scared of a challenge, but it felt like it was a very, very unnecessary one. And although I think it cost him a game, it already felt like the game was drifting away from for Alloa at that point. Bear in mind, they didn't even look particularly dominant when they were racing into that 3-goal lead from their kind of set pieces, but the momentum was all with Edinburgh at that point.
Aye, after that, and again, you're maybe just judging it from the highlights, but even before that, it seemed as if Edinburgh were just running Alloa with freedom. But now you take another player off, and it's it just became obviously, there might be slight home biases in terms of what is edited to show you in the highlights, but it just looked a bit like it was Innes Murray or Danny Hamling or James Cragan on the ball all the time, just running it at Alloa defenders.
Yeah, I think it was Cragan and Murray down the right-hand side, sort of crossed half a call all game, it seemed. I suppose the equaliser then and the winner are both absolute crackers. So the equaliser, Danny Handling, very aesthetically pleasing goal, this. Extremely aesthetically pleasing. Because it would have been aesthetically pleasing because he sort of cuts out his right foot outside the box and curls it. And it would have been aesthetically pleasing if it hit the top corner. But I think more so that it goes over the keeper and almost drops right at the bottom corner. I love that. Love that. So that was a made up for his comical own goal in the first half. And then Shanley gets his hat-trick goal and the winner ultimately with a volley on his weaker foot, also right into the side net, inside the side net. And two lovely goals to round off the day for Edinburgh. I mean, it seemed like they didn't really have any issue closing out the game after that. John Robertson also had a good game, had a good chance after that for Edinburgh. So it seems sort of positive. Obviously, I mean, it's not really been on the pitch stuff that's been an issue at any point this season for Edinburgh. They're having a cracking season, and have been since the start. But if they can get both bits of the club sort of facing the right direction, and you know the crowds are, I think, back up a bit because relatively speaking, because a lot of the fans that had from what Ali was telling me, I think the fans had quite a few points which they raised with the board, and all of them really were dealt with recently, but in the statement so far as they can be. So a bit of fan engagement actually working. And we do think Edinburgh sort of sit in terms of where they'll finish this season. I mean, they have to be thinking playoffs at this stage.
That's now third and equal in points with Falkirk. I think we've said a few times, haven't we, that last season them getting promoted was slightly out of kilter with some of their better teams in the past, and yet they seem to have taken to League One like duck to water. You know, I just imagine that a lot of maybe internally the expectation of this season at Edinburgh was to consolidate and become just a League One club. But at the moment, I think you'd be sitting back there and looking. You know, it is fairly compact. You know, they're sitting on 28, Queen of the South in seventh on 22. But, you know, so, yeah, they may still miss out on playoffs. But at this stage, you'd be thinking a playoffs would be a...
Yeah, I mean...
A not disappointing season.
They could, if they were to sort of accidentally get promoted, they could break in it, would be the only thing. Like, I wouldn't say they're in any way ready to be the championship, but they are going well. I mean, what do you think, Sean, in terms of the Irish Riders?
I think I'm going to have to rethink my stance on Edinburgh. So even when they were doing quite well, I still wasn't convinced that they would finish in the playoffs. I think there are kind of positives and negatives in terms of the makeup of the league when it comes to Edinburgh this season. I suppose they are unlucky at the fact that they've got Dunfermline and Falkirk in the division at the same time. And I think what also would have went against them, or we thought would go against them, is the fact we all thought League One was going to be really strong this season. So other than Dunfermline and Falkirk, who, let's face it, they will be first and second. I'd be amazed if they weren't. You presumed that Montrose would be pretty good. You presumed that Airdrie, I might know, as be as good without Ian Murray and Dylan Easton, but you thought they'd be strong. You presumed that Queen of South would be there or thereabouts when it comes to the playoffs. You wondered, although Kelty seemed to just maybe didn't sell as many conservatories over the summer because they haven't spent as much, but you still thought Kelty might have had a decent enough squad to be certainly in the top half and challenging for the playoffs. But actually, a lot of those teams that I've just mentioned are nowhere near as strong as we thought they'd be. And you go through that Edinburgh team, and it's kind of all right. Like, they maybe don't have like the greatest squad, but certainly in terms of a starting 11, there is like a decent team. They actually do have a decent League One team. I think the recruitment over the summer has been okay. I think as long as they don't play Queen of the South every week, because they seem to absolutely leather them. And they've struggled a wee bit against the better side, but that's only natural. As long as they can continue to churn out wins against the lesser lights in the league, then they probably should be there. And to be fair, like Alloa aren't one of the lesser lights in the division. This is a really impressive result. If you're talking about teams going for the playoffs, if we're saying that Edinburgh are, then by the same token, so are Alloa. And I didn't really fancy Alloa that much this season either, but Brian Rice, again, has probably put together a decent League One squad, and even guys like Connor Salmon, who is 34, 35 now, like he's having a decent season by his standards. So I think both of these teams will be pushing for the playoffs. In terms of Edinburgh, I'm now starting to fancy them after writing them off about 2 weeks ago.
Fair play. So that's that game. So why don't we move on to our last game, which is Annan Athletic 1, Elgin City 3. If you watch the highlights, I think it was actually Annan Athletic 1, Elgin City 1. because some absolutely tremendous camera work. Fair enough with the first goal, right? Because I think not the first goal, the second goal from Cameron, because he has a fair whack away from the goal. Obviously, it's not a particularly wide range of camera, so fair enough he missed that one. That's fine. But the last goal, it's like the defender sort of maybe looks like he's going to clear it, so the camera just like slowly pans away to like the halfway line, and
I assumed it was a pixel up mark.
Yeah, so is there a bald man
kind of resetting itself?
It was either pixel up, which I presume it is, or just like an Annan fan that was absolutely disgusted. I'm not fucking watching this anymore.
What makes it better, I thought, with the third goal is that obviously the two commentators are a bit of a laugh anyway, but because they're so disgusted, it would appear, from what we could see, that it was a pretty disastrous goal for Elgin for Annan to concede. Because of that, they don't actually say, "Oh, and Elgin have scored." They just like silence, and then a few like disgusted comments afterwards, and you're like, "Oh, so they scored then, did they?"
and then my favourite is the highlights finish with him, one of them just going, "Oh." which is just incredible. If just you, like just basically how all highlights should end if your team gets beat.
See if you ever watched, and I know like neither of you will ever have reason to watch Annan highlights, but that's just how that, like, they're just like that every single week. It's just a series of exclamations and groans. But I really like them. I'm a big fan of them.
Yeah, it was like, you know, like Barry Davis used to, like, you know, maybe like the pitchers talk and stuff, you know, just as a commentator, you know, sometimes you don't need to always be speaking as TV and stuff, but I think that commentators need to realise that actually don't trust the camera work quite so much. I maybe tell us what's going on.
Describe everything in granular detail because you can't actually see it.
We can't see that. So yeah, but good win for Elgin, who seemed to be a bit resurgent. Duncan?
Yeah. That, I mean, that's them up to third, which is kind of unexpected. It's been the first time they've been up that high at this stage in the season in quite a while. And even that, you know, was the sixth league win of the season. It took them till February last season to get to that stage. So there's progress, I think, but Elgin's progress is always quite feels razor thin. You know, the squad, if you saw on Saturday, you know that there was still three short in terms of numbers, so it really doesn't take much for, and that's that Elgin not really haven't carrying that many injuries at the moment as well. So, you know, they are carrying a light squad, which can be a problem, and I suspect will be going into the winter months. It never feels assured. There's never, even in the last decade, you know, that there's a feeling that, yeah, that this is our season. You know, that there's never really that sense of belief, I suppose, in the team.
So are you saying, like, over the last like 10 years or so, it's very rare for Elgin fans to think they have a chance of getting out of League Two? Because, well, obviously I'm not an Elgin fan, but generally, and certainly until the last couple of years, I've always kind of thought Elgin would do okay.
I think there's a realism that goes through a lot of Elgin fans. I think the club has been very clever at tempering any expectation. You know, every summer, Graham Tatter, as the chairman, will come out and say, oh, budgets, the tight, you know, it's difficult to get a player up here, you know, the recruitment's not, it's that sort of thing. If we get lucky, sort of. So there's never been a sense of that's transferred onto the fans in terms of expectation, like, you know, that we're building. There's never been cash, you know, splashed at Elgin in any form, so it never feels like, oh, this is our season. And especially, I mean, probably each of the last 8 or 9 seasons, especially after Rangers left the third division, there's always been a big spending club. So I think there's always been tempered as, well, we're not going to be able to win the title. And then, you know, I think we've been to the playoffs 4 times in 20 years, which is, or 22 years, which is not a great record. And all the team always seems to run out of a bit of steam. So it's a difficult one, but you would hope if they can continue the next few weeks, you know, they've got, I mean, the Scottish Cup, you never know what that could bring. I mean, they should beat Hillbeath Hawthorne on Saturday. And then they've got Stenny at home, which would hopefully be a win. And then they play Clyde in the Challenge Cup. So, you know, you're starting to think maybe you're getting a bit of run together, maybe a glamour tie in the quarterfinals, I think it would be, is it already the quarterfinals? Yeah, of the Challenge Cup. There might be
other glamour ties in the quarterfinals of the Scottish Challenge Cup.
You might get to go. You might get to go away to Belfast. Oh, I think that's probably. Yeah. So I think there's an opportunity potentially in January to develop the squad further and maybe actually try and consolidate and get up. I can't think Elgin have finished second since the playoffs have gone to the new format, which would just give you a bit more of an advantage in the playoffs.
The thing is, as well, so you, like you're talking about the fact that there's generally been like a big spending team in the fourth tier in recent years, and you're absolutely right. The thing which is quite interesting about this season as well is a lot of the teams that you kind of presumed would do quite well. So, like most people thought Forfar would be a playoff contender. They've been dreadful. Most people thought Annan would be a playoff contender. They haven't been good at all, and Elgin dispensed with them at the weekend fairly comfortably. Although I didn't think that Bonnyrigg would be there or thereabouts. They were, again, they were certainly some of the bookies, they were the bookies' favourites to win the title. So not only are there no kind of free spending clubs in League Two, a lot of the kind of teams that all the kind of fancied sides are really struggling. So suddenly this feels like a massive opportunity for Elgin to I don't think they'll challenge for the title ultimately, but definitely finish in the playoff places.
Yeah, the club has backed Gavin Price again. You know, he's been given an extended new deal, as have the rest of the backroom staff. You know, he's been there 5 years now.
How close do you think Gavin Price was to getting dispensed with last season? Because last season was pretty horrible for Elgin.
Nothing ever rumoured, if that makes it. Like, I think that it's a fairly modest club in that regard, in terms of they don't tend to... there hasn't been a turnover stat. You know, Ross Jack was there almost 5 years as well. You know, like, and then Jim Weir only left to go to Forfar. It's not a trigger happy board. I think they do appreciate loyalty and see that as a two way kind of relationship. I think Gavin Price has been discussed for other roles. I think even when the Forfar job came up recently, I think that there was chat about him, and even the Stirling job as well, maybe, because again, he, you know, relatively speaking, he lives in Aberfeldy. It's a bit of a distance to Elgin at the best of times.
Gavin
Stirling would maybe be a bit.
Gavin Price follows me on Twitter and appears to hate the Tories, judging by his Twitter. So I think he should have a job for life. What about...
that's a clanging name drop there, Sean. Jeez, Gavin Price follows you.
What about Jim Weir? Like, does he deserve a lot of the credit for... Because there has been a turnaround this season. There's no getting away from it.
I'm not sure, to be honest, because again, you don't really know with training twice a week. I think that just having more experience around the ground and around the team is helpful. Also, probably helps that Jim Weir is as fit as a butcher's dog in terms of being able to probably geez up a number of players in terms of getting them onside and getting their fitness tracked and things like that. Although I have to say that his bladder control is not once what it once was, as he had to come round the far side the other week at Bonnyrigg to see the end of the match. He needed to go to the loo, so he didn't fancy going for a pee run.
Just keep it hydrated.
Yeah, exactly. So
he went for a pish at the side of the park at Bonnyrigg.
No, he came round the side. He came through the away fans because at Bonnyrigg the dugouts are on the far side, so it was. You know, set up for a blockbuster finish, and his bladder couldn't take it. So he was, he's a man in the 60s, I think, late 50s, early 60s. You know, I'm surprised it doesn't happen to more managers, to be honest. But yeah, I think last year it was Steve Mackay, who's now taking up a Highland League role. That always seemed uneasy. Like, it almost felt like if things had gone awry, that your replacement is right there sitting in the assistant manager's seat. So, but again, that could just be idle speculation and kind of making two and two and making five. But it does feel like that Price and Weir have had a previous relationship with Price being his assistant, and it seems to be, and Jim Weir obviously taking time off away from the game after that car accident and seems to have reevaluated his life. And he's certainly a lot calmer, I would say, as an assistant manager than he was as a manager, which is probably something. But yeah, I think that there's potential there. I think, again, eight points is quite a lot of ground to make up on Stirling Albion, but there would be an achievement in being third and being best of the rest. Whether they can do that against the likes of East Fife is questionable. And again, all it takes is someone like Annan or Bonnie Rigg or Forfar, you know, even they can start taking points off other teams as well, which I think is going to be the kind of the litmus test for how you do in League Two this season. I think is, are you able to put away the supposed poorer teams and sitting at the bottom? But I could still see, it depends. I think having seen them in the flesh the other week, Bonnie Rigg, I would be, they probably need to get some recruits in, and you know what people have been saying about them not looking particularly fit. I think that is that's a fair comment. They like
too much flesh.
I mean, it's rich for me to be pointing out anyone's physiques, but I was surprised, put it that way, by some of the conditioning.
I'm spend more money on players, less money on Jaffa cakes. That's what Bonnie Rigg need to do in January.
What about Annan? I mean, just to touch on them, I mean, are they in relegation trouble? I'm pretty sure, Sean, you confidently predicted they would win the league.
Yes, absolutely. Which...
and their League Cup form was tremendous as well. Like, there's no getting away from that. And they did some just I think they scudded Elgin in the League Cup. Elgin went down to Galbank in July and got beat 4-0. But then Elgin have subsequently beat them 5-1 and 3-1. So I'm not really sure what that says about Annan really this season.
I think in terms of players that they still have that I would expect to allow them to get out of trouble. So as much as I didn't like Chris Johnson at Stars Park, a decent player at League Two. I would say Tommy Goss is one of the better strikers in League Two. I think Tommy Muir is like a kind of decent option for them up top as well. I think I underestimated how much of a loss Owen Moxon would be, who joined Carlisle. I mean, he was just a really, really good player. I hadn't heard much of him since he went down south, but I checked recently and he seems to be playing every week for Carlisle. Like, I know they're in League Two, it's not a particularly high level, but regardless, to kind of make
Harry McCurdy did well there.
To make the transition from SPFL League Two to English League Two and seemingly doing it quite comfortably, he's a massive loss to Anna. I don't think they quite know how to fill that void, I suppose. I still think they'll have enough. I still think they're better than Bonnie Rigg. You would expect that Forfar will get better under Ray McKinnon. I suppose another concern is that Albion Rovers, who I presumed they would finish bottom by default, actually don't seem as bad as maybe I thought they would be. Certainly by their standards, they seem to be okay. So yes, I think as much as the, like we all thought the top end of League Two would very much be open this season, but the bottom is very open as well. They're probably in the mix, put it that way.
Nothing is then, but you know, after sort of 13 years of them, you know, always being, you know, almost on the cusp of getting promoted, and if they go to leave the league the other way, it would be quite funny, I would say. But I think they're probably, you know, it strikes me as they're the sort of a team that could get relegated, and albeit obviously a team getting relegated is a disaster, but it probably wouldn't necessarily be as big a disaster for them as it would be for other clubs for a variety of sort of geographical and maybe community and reasons, and maybe, you know, financially they're not maybe on the precipice like some other clubs are. Would that be correct, or would it be curtains?
I think you make a valid point, and I think more importantly, there's certain teams that I just don't want to see get relegated. As much as I think the kind of opening the leagues up and kind of fumigating it and letting more teams in is a good thing. I do think I should have the power of veto about who gets relegated and who doesn't.
County Meath should not have gone down, for example.
Teams like County Meath and Berwick getting relegated really irritated me. Annan, I don't have anything against them, but if they were to drop down, fine.
Yeah, they'll be back up in a couple of years, probably. Obviously, Bonnery Rose would be another example of a team that would, just if they went back where they came from, then they'd probably just be the best team in the Lone League again, with the exception of the Mighty Rangers B, of course. But anyway, why don't we leave that there? We could round off today's podcast by looking ahead to this weekend's games. I think Annan actually have a league game against Stranraer, but most of the other lower league sides are involved in the third round Scottish Cup action. So there's a variety of ties there. Sean, what ties are you most looking forward to, and are there any shocks on the cards, do you reckon?
I was trying to look for specifically for shocks, and I found this quite difficult. I know we kind of mentioned this just before we started, and what you said was absolutely right. There's a lot of ties where you think, well, that might be a shock if only it was reversed, like if the smaller team were at home. So I think there's loads of interesting ties. There's certain games I would like to be a shock, but I'm not entirely sure that they will be. I'm quite jealous about Falkirk fans getting to travel up to Wick. Like, Wick is just a brilliant away day. I'd love travelling up there a few years ago. It's about 10 years ago now.
Was that not pre-season, or was it early in the season, or was it?
It was Grant Murray's first ever game, competitive game. It was a Challenge Cup first round tie, 4-2 Raith Rovers. Comprehensive, absolutely swatted them aside.
I suspect a bit of difference between July and the last weekend in November.
Just to make you aware, it was the heaviest rain I've ever seen in July. But no, I do think Falkirk got through that comfortably. Another game that I would like to see a shock, but I don't think it will be, Fraserburgh Arbroath. I think there is an element of me that thinks this might be a shock, and the reason is that Dick Campbell has a tendency to, when he plays maybe a kind of lesser team in a cup or a kind of smaller team in a cup, he will rotate. If he does do that, bear in mind Arbroath are going through a really sticky patch at this moment in time, then there is a chance for Fraserburgh. But however, the only thing I would say is Fraserburgh beat Stranraer in the last round. Great result for them. However, they were, from watching the highlights, I thought they were pretty fortunate. Like, Stranraer looked like they were the better team on the day. Stranraer aren't as good as Arbroath, so you would expect Arbroath to come out on top. But considering how poor Arbroath have been, considering the fans seem to be, certainly the online fans, to be fair, seem to be swinging towards thinking that Campbell is jackets on a kind of shugly peg. It would be very funny if Arbroath lost this one. However, the game I'm going to go for is, and I do think they have a chance here, University of Stirling to beat Albion Rovers. Now, actually, I think Albion Rovers are decent by their standards this season, and actually in half-decent form at this moment in time. However, University of Stirling have got a number of good young players in the squad at the moment. They've won their last five games. I think they might now be second in the Lone League. They're only a couple of points behind the rampaging Rangers B team, albeit they've played two games more. So I think University of Stirling have a chance in this round. If it's going to be a shock, I would edge towards that one more than any other tie.
There's also the rare opportunity to do a two games in one day at the same stadium if people are that inclined on with Hamilton versus East Kilbride. Then you can go on the world tour of Hamilton supermarkets and come back for Clyde Dumbarton at 7:45, which
you know something, Duncan, as enticing as that sounds,
I know.
I'm going to say no.
Okay, I'm off to Hillbeath Hawthorne against Elgin City on Saturday. New ground for me. I think it should be quite interesting. Who knew that Cowdenbeath arguably had a second team? Is Hillbeath separate from Cowdenbeath? John, or is this
So I would, so bear in mind I'm from Fife, however my Fife geographical knowledge is so poor, I kind of thought Hillabeath was more towards Dunfermline rather than Cowdenbeath, albeit Cowdenbeath is quite close to Dunfermline. I would have had it closer to Dunfermline, but I could very much be wrong.
Okay, so I'll do some investigations while I'm out on Saturday. No, but yeah, no, as you said, Ewan, yeah, there's just not, you know, even your Wraith, if that game had been away talking Leck, or I don't know, yeah, even Darvel hosting Montrose, with, you know, you're starting to think maybe, but there's just not. You could maybe argue for Martin against Stenny, but again, it's difficult. You know, Stenny haven't had a great record in the Scottish Cup, and especially against.
Why did you say that like Tony the Tiger?
What?
The word great.
Great.
I didn't mean to, but I'll have to watch out for that now. I'm now really very conscious of it. But yes, yeah. Stenny have been so up and down this season that I could easily see them going away and winning 4-0, but also it wouldn't surprise me to see them knocked out by for Martin.
Hmm. Yeah, you can see the Jim Baxter statue in Hillabeath. That's a landmark. Was from there.
I will go and take a picture.
I think Scott Brown's for. Yeah, Scott Brown's for Hillabeath as well. I don't think it's a statue yet. But yes,
hopefully he get one. Yeah, I would say the game I'm most looking forward to is and hopefully attending, childcare dependent, we shall see. Is Lithgow Rose against Sauchie Juniors, because it's local for me. And albeit I don't expect a shock in that, I would expect Lithgow Rose to win there. So it's first against third in the East of Scotland League. But the Lithgow Rose have been going great guns this season. They've not lost in the last 18 games, and not that many draws. I mean, well, they actually did with Hillabeath at the start of the month, 3-3. But they score loads of goals in Lithgow Rose, loads of goals. They're top of the league at the moment. Hillabeath are third. Sauchie Juniors are in third. First against third and Lithgow Rose are home. Hopefully Lithgow Rose, as far as I'm concerned by that. But even if they don't, there'll still be an East of Scotland team in the fourth round of the Scottish Cup, which is pretty cool.
I know there'll probably be a lot of people saying, oh, it'd be great if like an East of Scotland team got Celtic or Rangers. No, I hope an East of Scotland team get Wraith Rovers at Starts Park and we crush them.
Well, I hope the gallant Rosie Posey get Wraith Rovers at Prestonfield and stuff you.
You go. Everybody's different.
Yeah, I went to
and then Monday night. What do we have up against the? We've got Ayr United at home to Pollock.
Again, if only it'd been another way about.
Television's Pollock.
Television's Pollock, but you're up again. You could be watching Portugal versus Uruguay, but I think I know what I'll be.
That
seemed out of the blue.
Yes, albeit I've only seen them play on television in the Scottish Cup, and they've seemed to do quite well. presumably the other games are not so good. They're just like.
Televised West of Scotland League. That's what
Pollock are
calling
for. Yeah. We shall leave it there, gentlemen. Thank you for giving. I mean, we have all collectively missed Jason Cumdingo Cummings playing in the World Cup, so we could record this podcast. So I appreciate all of your sacrifices there. And no doubt we will speak to you all soon. I think we're going to record a Patreon episode about the deserved sacking of Giovanni Van Bronckhorst. So if you're so inclined, you can subscribe to the Patreon and listen to that. Me celebrating that news. We shall leave it there. So thanks for your time, gentlemen, and we shall speak to you all again soon.
Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper?
a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.